again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast, episode 146. And we are the show that covers all things Orlando City, Orlando Pride, and Orlando City B of the USL League One, newly named USL League One. Anyway, I'm Michael Citro. I am the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. Joining me, as always, from Tallahassee, Florida, David Rowe. Dave, how are you this week? Survived the hurricane.
Did survive the hurricane. Actually, very, very fortunate. I live on the east side of town, the west side of town, a mere 20 miles or so. Definitely got it worse than I did. And, of course, a lot of other places west of Tallahassee got it way, way worse. So really feel for all of them. But, as I said, fortunate, you know, no damage, no nothing here at the Casa de Roe. So everything's good for us. Thank you for asking.
Cool. Glad you didn't blow away in the wind. Those are always fun to sit through, yeah. And by fun I mean nerve-wracking. But glad you're you and yours are okay. Let us get on with this week's podcast. I don't anticipate going over a lot with Orlando City at the New England Revolution.
What you're saying is we just talked about one disaster, and now we're going to talk about another.
Yeah, it was 2-0 to the Revs, scoreless first half. Adam Grinwis returns from his infection, gets a start, played well again for the Lions in the loss. Not much he could do with either goal, but just a game where no Dom Dwyer, no Yoshimar Yotun, no Yuri Rossell, no Mohamed Elmounir, no problem from New England.
Yeah, definitely not.
Orlando came out with a bit of a different shape, different look. Whether you call it a 3-5-2, whether you call it a 3-4-3, whether you call it a 5-3-2, whatever the hell it was, it didn't really work. New England had tons of the ball, tons of possession. Quite a few scoring chances. I thought Orlando defended well for the most part, but it was always a matter of, is Orlando going to be able to hit on the counter with so many weapons missing and, you know, when they hadn't been able to score with their weapons. So you take the weapons away from a team that can't score in four games, and it turns out you can't score then either.
Yeah, and you keep using the word weapons plural. I'm not sure if that's what you're meaning to do.
Well, you know. I do mean it because I believe that Dom Dwyer and Yoshimar Yotun at least are
okay.
Multiple weapons.
Okay, I'll give it to you. So there's two.
We
so
do yes. know that this team is woefully shy of forwards, woefully shy of attacking midfielders, and it is what it is. This team's probably not scoring another goal this year unless it's an accident.
Hey. Do own goals from the other team count for us?
They do count on the scoreboard, yes.
So there's a chance right there. Yeah, it's we both predicted no score in this one. We were right.
I think I did predict a one on our side.
Oh, that's right.
I think I just lost my head for a moment and thought the law of averages says at some point they're going to get a penalty or. I thought they'd get a penalty or maybe put in an own goal or something weird might happen, but no, that was not the case.
Yeah, let me double check. You're right. You did predict a goal for the Lions. I'm not sure why you did that.
Just to be maybe, different.
You were probably distracted with the whole you know, selling your house thing. I was right this time. Or no, I was not. I said 3.
You said 3-0.
I said 3.
Yeah,
I said 3-0. You said 2-1. Yeah, darn it.
They split the difference on us and made it 2-0.
Yeah, well, between the two of us, we were right.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works. But
well, I'll tell you what's not working, Orlando City's offense.
Well, you know, I don't even really want to talk about this game because what are you going to say? I mean, New England was all over the Lions, and it was just a matter of whether they could spring Josue Coleman on a counterattack or maybe Chris Mueller. But no, it turns out they cannot. And so it's just a matter of time. Richie Larea got a rare start. He kind of was mostly invisible to my mind. And when he wasn't invisible, he was doing things like giving up free kicks just above the area or failing miserably at a clearance that ends up coming right back into your box 2 seconds later. Just not a great night, but you're not expecting that from somebody who hasn't played in forever. And I didn't really expect a whole lot when I saw the team sheet, and I got exactly what I expected.
That's true. Anybody who was going into this one predicting a win was, whatever you're taking, can you send some up to me? And or you're just crazy. Like you said, it's exactly what we've been having for way too long now. We would be essentially we you could go back and take what we said about last week and pretty much plug it in, and it would be the same.
Yeah, I think that New England actually played better against Orlando City than FC Dallas did. But at the same time, a 2-0 loss is a 2-0 loss, and at least it wasn't an embarrassment. I kind of, when I saw the team sheet, I thought it would get worse, and it could have been worse. The shots were lopsided, possession was lopsided, passing was lopsided. Orlando City wasn't very good in this game. Certainly no possession, no build up really, just a couple of scoring chances, not really great chances, a couple of half chances. And when you look at the final score, you have to feel kind of fortunate to get out of there with only a 2-goal loss, tying the MLS record for goals conceded in a season at 70 now, Dave, 70 goals shipped. And although I will say I thought that the back line played pretty well overall. I thought that Sané had a pretty good game. I thought O'Neal had a good game. RJ Allen
RJ
played pretty
Allen, yeah.
well. Sutter played pretty well, although neither fullback was really involved in the offense because there was no offense. Other than that, I thought they defended well. And that was pretty much it. I think Adam Grinwis played about as well as you can expect him to play in that situation. Dave, who's your man of the match?
It is one Adam Grinwis, because he did play as good as you can, and he had opportunity to prove to us that he was going to be a man of the match. Several saves, including some that kept that score much closer than, like you said, it probably should have been. Glad to see him back. I'm glad he's playing. I mean, actually, he's played pretty well in the games that he's gotten in, so that's really nice to see. I don't know what it bodes for next season, but regardless of the quality that was on the pitch that night, Adam was certainly the best for the Lions.
I agree. I did the grades this week, and I thought Adam played better than anyone else, at least in terms of he kept it as a respectable game. I think he did more to keep the team in the game than anyone else did, so I give him my man of the match as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if he starts the rest of the games this year, quite honestly. There's only a few left. There's still a trip to the New York Red Bulls at the end of the season for the finale, and in between then, a Wednesday night tilt at home against the Seattle Sounders, who are playing extremely well, so that's probably going to be a butt kicking, and then the Columbus Crew come into town on Sunday. So, 3 games in a week. I think that's probably it's fine. Just like the meme. This is fine.
Yeah, sitting in a room full of fire. I look at it this way. Okay, yeah, it's 3 matches in a week, but you know what? It's that much sooner that it gets done.
Yeah, Dom should return for Wednesday. There will be no Yoshi, who will play Tuesday night against the U.S. men's national team. That's why we're recording this early and why it's going to drop on Tuesday this week rather than Wednesday. Plus the fact that you guys will get sick of seeing my byline on Wednesday because I already have a U.S. women's national team preview, an Orlando City preview, and I'm probably doing Lion Links Wednesday. So I didn't want to do 4 bylines in a day, plus the whatever I do after the game, either recap or grades, would be a fifth byline. So we moved up the recording of the podcast to get that out a little early. Otherwise, it would be just a ridiculous amount of Michael Citro in one day for the website.
Well, let's make it a little less. I'll take links. So I'm off that day. I'll do links.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a big help. Big help, because yeah, it's a hectic week. Once we get through this week and the men's friendlies are over and the CONCACAF Women's Championship is over, things are gonna. And obviously there's 2 games this week for Orlando City, but after this week, after Sunday's game, just one more game left, and that's at Red Bulls, and then the merciful, sweet, merciful death of the off season is upon us. And in like 3 weeks of that game, we'll be like, oh, this off season sucks.
Yeah, we'll be begging for news of who's staying, who's going, what's going on. Yeah,
We
it'll.
will conveniently forget how bad this soccer season has gone, and it, I would love to have the time to go back and insert some clips from the preseason when we had so much hope and so much excitement for the signings that Orlando City had in the off season and how much optimism there was, and having Paul Tenorio on the show saying that this team would likely be in the playoffs, and based on the signings and oh my
Oh,
goodness.
the heady days before the season
Yeah,
started.
so one other note from this game, which you really don't want to talk about, but 24th different back line in one season.
That's got to be a record.
It's got to be, and it's not a record you want any more than you want most goals conceded or worst goal differential. And Orlando
We're going to
City
get those.
could end up with both of those as well. All right, let's turn our attention to the Orlando Pride, Dave. Today, as we record this on Monday, the 15th, we found out what Sydney Leroux's illness was that kept her out late in the season for a few matches, and it's very sad news actually that we had surmised privately. I didn't put anything out into the universe publicly. I don't think that maybe Sydney was pregnant, and that was the reason that she wasn't playing. It turns out that she was, but she lost the baby, and she tweeted out today a very poignant, very heartfelt tweet today about how devastating that was. And obviously that's something that affects not just physically but mentally, just an exceedingly painful process. I my heart goes out to Dom and Sid for this, obviously, because I know what that's like. My wife and I went through it three times. In fact, we eventually had a beautiful baby girl in 2008, and she was supposed to be twins, as it turns out, but we had lost two prior to that pregnancy, and then we thought we had lost the third, and it turned out we still had a child. But it was, the same
It's
thing happened. So the evidence points to possibly being a twin situation that went south. So it is painful. You do. You go through a lot of emotions, and the elation of knowing that you're going to have a child, and then that gets taken away, and the woman, I can speak, from firsthand experience, the woman blames herself when that happens. It's devastating mentally. I remember trying to pick up the pieces of my wife several times, and it's not something I would wish on anybody. It happens all too often. I think one in four pregnancies terminate prematurely, and it we can't express enough how much our sympathies lie with Dom and Sid.
Absolutely. I unfortunately I had that same experience many, many, many years ago with my ex-wife when early, fairly early on in the pregnancy, but we also, lost the pregnancy. And it you're right, it's in you're grieving, your grief is no less than any other loss. It feels the same, and it hits you just as hard. To give people an idea, when I found out, obviously I live in Tallahassee. My dad lives in Lakeland, Florida. I called him, and he was at my house in 4 hours because he knew that, I needed support. So, I mean, it's that big of a thing. And so for and I'm sure it did for you. I mean, reading that tweet from Sid today, brings that up back up on a personal level for you. And it's like you said, I completely feel for that family, and the loss. And I know that they'll get through it. I know that they're, I mean, they're incredibly strong. positive people, and I'm sure that, you know, they will be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something that ever leaves you, but
right.
It's, you know, but all we can do right now is just, you know, keep them in your thoughts.
Yeah. So, you know, incredibly brave to come out the way she did with the whole story. And, you know, she expressed that she, you know, when she was quote unquote sick, she was going through a lot, you know, not only physically, but she felt she couldn't talk about it. You know, like I said, the woman often blames herself that this is what I'm put on the earth to do. And it's something that I failed to do. And it's so devastating just to be the man in their lives and watch them and try to support them through that. So it was, you know, it's difficult, but I'm glad that Sid and Dom have a good support system of family and friends and teammates, and people like Tom Sermani, I'm sure was probably wonderful, to them as well. So, and again, not to belabor it, but that's, you know, that's a pretty big story. That's why Sid was out. You know, it's something that people need to be aware of. October is apparently Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. I didn't know that until, you know, we hear all about the breast cancer awareness, mm-hmm. but this is a situation that it doesn't get talked about nearly as much, and for it to happen one in every four is just an incredible statistic that is awful. And again, our thoughts are with you, Dom and Sid, and you know. Thank you for your bravery in coming forward and telling your story, Sydney. And we are out here. We've gone through it too. We know what you're dealing with, and we, you know, we support you. You are awesome, and I'm sure you'll bounce back and have more healthy siblings for young Cassius.
Absolutely, and just think, you know, when that does happen, you know, Cassius will be, you know, that much bigger of a big brother, and maybe even better to help out, you know, once that all comes through. Quick aside, my oldest was 3 when my youngest, and this happened after, but when he was born, we actually had to bribe him with a bag of candy that we told him was from his younger brother, so that he would be cool with, you know, now having to share a mom and dad. So, you know, candy works.
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for Kaylee, you know, my daughter, that was going to be our last try after losing a couple. So, you know, thank God that we stuck with it. And, you know, we finally had a healthy baby to show for all the pain and suffering that we went through. But not a really a topic that we often discuss, obviously, and obviously a very heavy and very serious conversation. Let's turn our attention, Dave, to a little bit lighter and more frivolous affairs. The MLS Combine is going to return to Orlando. Good news.
Of course, it's good news. As I've said many times, anything soccer related that happens in Orlando is good for Orlando. It's good for the organization. It's good for the fans. I think it's good for soccer, given the quality of the stadium and honestly the quality of the fans. You know, looking back, we're kind of just past a year on the whole U.S. men's national team not making the World Cup against Trinidad and Tobago, but just a mere few days before that, they blanked Panama 4-0 in Orlando, and it was magnificent. You know, Christian Pulisic actually, you know, penned a when he penned his article about the whole not making a thing, one of the things he mentioned was how great the fans were in Orlando. So I think there's a reason why they continue to do it. I think obviously, you know, we had it last year and they obviously did a good job with it, and that, you know, if you do that, you get the rewards from it. So I think it's absolutely a good thing.
Right. I was there. I attended a couple of days of the combine, and it was a good event. And the good news, obviously, the club doesn't have to send anybody spend any money to send the coaching staff and general manager to the combine wherever it is. They don't have to get hotel rooms. They don't have to fly anywhere. So a little bit of savings there for the front office. Maybe they can start building that training facility in Lake Nona, maybe.
Like, they can at least buy some equipment for it.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, it's a good event, and Christian Pulisic is right. We were awesome in that game, us US fans. I was at the game as a fan, and it was pretty darn loud. It was nice. It was a rocking type atmosphere, and the right team won. So I thought everything looked really good after that game until the team took the pitch in Trinidad. So.
Yeah, Bruce Arena even said that he wanted to play every game there.
We will move on before we get sad about the U.S. men's national team not making the last World Cup. But yeah, that'll be in January in Orlando. The combine will be, of course, the draft will be in Chicago at the McCormick Place Convention Center. FC Cincinnati will have the first overall selection in the 2019 MLS Super Draft. So now we know where the combine will be back here. We know where the draft will be. And, FC Cincinnati's got the first pick. And Orlando City will either have, what, the second or third pick?
Yeah, it can't be that much further down. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah. So, it'll be interesting to visit the combine and to get to meet some of these kids, like Chris Mueller last year, and see who it is that catches the coach's eyes and the GM's eyes. And, good on Orlando for getting yet another event here. Soccer capital of the South, like it or not, Atlanta, deal with it. U.S. men and women, of course. The men went down fighting to Colombia. They were trailing 1-0, but took a second half lead, which I did not expect. It came out of nowhere, 2-1. And then unfortunately gave a goal right back 3 minutes after taking the lead. So it was 2-2. And then just Colombia was just too much. It was just overpowering. Too many pieces missing for the U.S. I didn't think it was a particularly great game for Matt Miazga. I didn't think that that Michael Bradley played very well in that game. I was a little impressed with Timothy Weah at times, and Kellen Acosta looks like he's playing his way back into the conversation. He had a pretty decent outing. Bobby Wood doing Bobby Wood things every now and then is nice to see. They will play Peru on Tuesday night, and we'll have a recap and a preview of that. And the U.S. women, Dave, have qualified for the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup.
You got to give it to the women. Just making everything better. The U.S. women's national team makes everything better. No matter how bad you feel about Orlando's season, as we mentioned, no matter how bad you feel about the men missing the World Cup, the women, the number one team in the world. Frankly, we probably would have done better against Trinidad and Tobago last year if they had taken the field. They absolutely steamrolled the opponents in CONCACAF. Of course, they still have to play Canada, which will be their toughest test. But regardless, they actually did what they should have done, not what you expected them. You expected them to win, but they absolutely rolled everybody, and it was so much fun to watch. And if you're a fan of soccer, you have to be, and if you're a U.S. fan, you have to be excited about the upcoming game against Canada and then the World Cup next year, knowing the U.S. is going.
Absolutely. No stumble at all. This has been a really impressive run by the U.S. women's national team. I haven't seen this team with this kind of hunger in quite some time. They look like a team that's playing pissed off, playing hungry. They're looking for goals constantly. They're pressuring high. Granted, CONCACAF doesn't offer a lot of great competition, so you expect them to win and win handily. Even when teams play, park the bus and play the low block defense, but The U.S. has steamrolled the competition to the tune of 24-0 in the four wins. They will play Canada on Wednesday night in the CONCACAF Championship. Both of those teams are through, so congratulations to Orlando Pride players Alex Morgan, Ashlyn Harris, and Shalina Zdorsky. The
Absolutely.
latter with Canada, of course. Jamaica will play Panama for the right to get the third automatic bid from CONCACAF, and the loser of that third place match will have to play in against Argentina, I believe, in a home and home. So that's something the U.S. had to do against Italy. You'll recall a few years back, they had to do the, go to the play-in round. Their one stumble in CONCACAF qualifying. Anyway, so Wednesday night showdown is going to be big. Canada themselves have also steamrolled the competition to the tune of 24-1, so very similar, although 12 of their goals came against a ridiculously poor Cuba side, and a Cuba side that everybody feels bad for because everyone was killing Cuba. I think even Jamaica beat them like 8 or 9 to nothing. So it was not a good team. But yeah, Canada has struggled in a couple of these games. They ended up winning their semifinal against Panama 7-0, but it took them a while to get going in that game. And Panama rested a lot of their starters for the third place game, believe it or not. It was not a case of we're going to run our best out there. It was a case of we're going to rest our players, figuring we're probably not going to beat Canada, but we really got to gear up for our biggest game to qualify, and that's the third place game, and that's what Panama's doing. I don't even think Yeneth Bailey played in that game in the semifinals on Sunday. So Panama say putting all their eggs in the third place basket, and maybe not a bad
That's
strategy, but considering how Canada started, I wonder if about 20 minutes in they were kicking themselves for not playing their starters.
they may have been 20 minutes in, but 60 minutes in they weren't. So, and you know, here's the thing. It's bad enough in places like even the U.S. and England and Canada where there is support for the women's clubs, but it's not at the level that it needs to be, let alone someplace like Cuba or even Panama. You know, the amount of support that the women get there is laughable, and it's really sad. And you know, hopefully that will change as things go forward. But regardless, the match against Canada's, you know, ranked number 5 in the world. They are no slouches. Obviously, you know, they have excellent players. It will be the toughest test in this tournament for the U.S. I do expect the U.S. to win. However, it also doesn't matter. The U.S. is in. That's what's important. That being said, I don't see this team, like you said, the way they're playing right now. They've got, I don't know if it's a chip on their shoulder or if they're just feeling it right now or what, but I expect them to go out same way, full out, and you know, try to score goal after goal after goal. Obviously, it'll be tougher against Canada, but I don't see anything. I don't see them changing anything, you know, as far as their approach.
Yeah, Canada will give them a little competition because Canada is a good counter-attacking side. They won't be afraid to huff the ball up the pitch to Christine Sinclair, Nichelle Prince, Janine Becky, players like that. Adriana Leon, who is tied with Alex Morgan for the Golden Boot right now. Each of them has 6 goals. Alex has played in 3 games, and she has a brace in all three. In fact, the third game, Alex could have had 6, 7 goals. She hit the woodwork. She hit the woodwork 3 times, was robbed by good saves on a couple of other chances, and she hit the woodwork again the other night in the semifinal. So Alex Morgan has really zeroed in. 6 goals in this tournament. She's gone from 90 career international goals to 96 in the blink of an eye. It's looking good for her to reach 100 soon. It probably won't be against Canada,
No,
but
but
it would be really cool if it was, because that would mean a 4-goal night and probably a lopsided victory in the CONCACAF Championship final.
well, and it would be more than 4-goal night because there's no way that Alex is scoring 4 goals and somebody else isn't also getting at least one in there. I think I remember hearing that Alex is on a 1 goal per game this year
Yeah, 20.
pace.
She's more than that. She's 23 goals in her last 23 games. That dates back to last calendar year.
Wow, that's utterly phenomenal.
Yeah, it's very impressive. It's Mia Hamm, Abby Wambach level, really. I mean, you're talking the legends of the game. So
And
she's quickly climbing the charts. She's already third all time in multi-goal games. She has 22, and only Hamm and Wambach have more.
she didn't even, she had a brace the other night, but one of those came on a penalty, and so there was other chances that she had, like you said, and then and that was just in that game. In the previous game, like you said, hitting the woodwork all over the place. So I mean, it's not like it's a fluke thing. I mean, she is, at least with the U.S. Women's National Team, she is absolutely on fire.
She's been very dangerous. Rapinoe's been very dangerous. Horan, Ertz, of course, on set pieces, especially. Tobin Heath's been great. I mean, everybody has really upped their game. Kelly O'Hara's played fantastic. It's really a group that looks more determined than I've seen them in a long time. Like, they are very hungry to get to not only get to the World Cup, but to reestablish themselves as the favorite in that World Cup. They want to defend it, and it'll be interesting to see how they come out on Wednesday, knowing they're in. Is there a little bit of a foot off the pedal? Probably not, because Canada is really their arch rival, their nemesis, if you will, a little bit. And even though they have a good record against Canada, the games are always very tight, very hotly contested. So it'll be fun to watch, but I won't get to watch it because I'll be at the Orlando City game.
Oh, yes. So I was just about to say, how nice is it being able to watch the U.S. Women's National Team instead of Orlando City? And unfortunately, Michael will not get to do
I
that this
can't do it.
Wednesday.
I'm going to record it, so I'll be able to watch it later.
Oh, it'll be the palate cleanser afterwards.
Yeah, get the bad taste of whatever the Sounders do to Orlando City out of my mouth. Anyway, Dave, that's a wrap on the U.S. teams. Let's go to our mailbag. You could do two ways to email us, or two ways to contact us to ask us anything. It doesn't have to be soccer related. It could be related to anything else. You can either email us, themainland@gmail.com is that email address, or you can hit us up on Twitter. Our Twitter account is @themainland, and please use the hashtag AskTMLPC so we can easily find it in the myriad of likes and retweets and responses that we get on Twitter. Please, AskTMLPC is your hashtag on Twitter. So let's get to the questions that I can see. Reckless, he has asked us before some questions. He's got another question. Is Chris Mueller good enough to be MLS Rookie of the Year? Or, as a pop-up for maintenance pops up on my screen,
Or is he just
is
the
he just
best?
the best of an overall poor rookie class? I will say right now, Chris Mueller is not good enough to be MLS Rookie of the Year. I think he'll get some, maybe some play, maybe some votes because of his early season play, but Corey Baird's going to win this award from RSL.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. If Chris had been able to maintain even a modicum of what he was doing early in the season, then he would be in the discussion. Unfortunately, he, like the rest of the team, I don't want to say slacked off, because Mueller certainly has never slacked off in any game that he's played for the Lions. That's one thing you can absolutely say about him. But his production just hasn't been good enough, and whether that's, how he's been played, whether, the pieces around him, that's up for, debate, argument, input. But no, he's unfortunately not good enough as of now to be MLS Rookie of the Year. Now, if you would ask us, after the first third of the season, I think we even said, oh, if he can keep this up, then yeah, he's absolutely in
Yeah, he
contention.
was the favorite. I mean, he's like the guy who comes out of nowhere and he's your clubhouse leader. He makes the cut, and then Saturday and Sunday come and he just falls down the leaderboard and you don't even know where he finished. You
Yeah.
know, like to get
And we like
that's
him.
my first golf analogy on this podcast, I believe.
I at least with me it is, as far as I can remember. We've done this over 75 times now, but yeah, and the thing is, we both like Chris Mueller. I mean, we like his work rate. We like the things, we like his potential. And so, don't get us wrong, I would love for the kid to win it, but it's not going to happen. And here's the good thing about that: it won't matter to him. He's not the kind that's gonna. It's not gonna bother him.
Right.
He's a, you know, kind of the old school lunch pail. Go to work, get, you know, get his job done, you know, give everything that he's got and leave it all on the field kind of guy. And that's what I love about him.
Got a lot of upside. He'll be fine, I think. He'll develop a little more. Just needs to work on some finishing moves and some 1v1 moves and probably another off season of conditioning. And I think he'll be just fine. The transition from college to MLS is very, very tough. And, yeah. You know, it takes a special player to have a consistently good rookie year just from start to finish. It's very rare. And, you know.
And like we said, he's never stopped his motor. It's not right. Like he's slacking off.
Hats off to Corey Baird, though. I mean, Corey Baird's played well all season. He played well here when Real Salt Lake came in. So thank you, Reckless, for the question. Spot has a question. Can we go back in time to those Quintero to Orlando rumors and make that happen? Do you have that power? We do not. We do not have that power.
No. I don't have the Infinity Gauntlet. I can't do it.
Can we go back in time? No. If we could go back in time, I'd go back to April when I when I didn't dread turning on the TV for Orlando City or going to the stadium to see them play because I knew they had a really good chance to win games back then. Quintero did play or did look really solid in that game against the U.S. the other day. So it would be nice to see Quintero maybe come to Orlando and see what he can do in purple.
We don't have to go back in time. We can simply start a new rumor.
Yeah, it can still happen.
You heard it here first. Quintero to Orlando. It's a thing.
Yeah, it's you never know.
No, but they can clip out that part of the podcast that I just said and run with it.
Fair enough. All right. Thank you, Spot. And thank you to everyone who writes in your Ask Us Anything questions. You could do it again. themainland@gmail.com is your email address to do it that way. Or hit us up on the Twitters at the mainland with hashtag AskTMLPC. All right, Dave, we have two games this weekend, and the Seattle Sounders come into town for a Wednesday night matchup. That is a team that Orlando City has never beaten, although they drew last year at CenturyLink on a dramatic late goal from Scott Sutter. And what is your key matchup, and what is your score prediction for the Sounders at Orlando City?
Key matchup is the whatever back line is put out for Orlando City against Seattle's attack. Will it be the 25th back line?
Unless it's
very possibly.
Same one, you know. That
unless
you
say it could be. That's what I said. It could be. So yeah, it's whatever we do on defense, and it's really more of a how badly can they not. You know, how badly are they going to get beat? So I'm going to be pessimistic more than I – no, actually, I'm going to be about the same as I was. What, 3-0? Yeah, 3-0.
I will say 3-0 as well. I've learned my lesson. I got crazy and predicted a goal, and it didn't happen. So I'm going to go back to my pessimistic ways and say 3-0 is a score I could agree with you on. And I think that the key matchup to me is not in the face. Please, Seattle, not in the face. That's it. Seattle's missing a couple of players. They're missing Rui Diaz and I think Ladero is also out on international duty. So they're missing a couple of key guys, but they've been playing so well the last couple of months. They started off terribly. You know, they chose not to fire their coach, and he turned them around and got them headed in the right direction. And, you know, now they're looking like they're going to go make a decent playoff run. And that will not be a problem for them on Wednesday to face an Orlando City team that is absolutely just reeling and punch drunk at this point. So then we'll turn our attention to the Columbus Crew coming in on Sunday. Key matchup and score prediction, Dave.
God, I hadn't even looked past Seattle yet. Okay, let's see. Columbus. Yeah, it's at this point, I don't expect any scoring, so there is no reason to pick on the other side of the pitch for me right now. But to keep it fresh, let's say that we've got a bunch of defensive midfielders on the pitch, which is no stretch in that, and how they are able to minimize or maximize our possession in the midfield to kind of keep things away from Columbus. If they do that, then maybe they can limit the score. I'll be positive and go 2-0 on that one.
All right. You and I are really in sync. I was also going to say 2-0 for Columbus. And the key matchup is going to be Orlando City's fullbacks against Justin Merrim, who will score a brace, and it'll be 2-0.
Of course he will.
That's all I got for you.
Yeah, and of course he will, because why not?
It's just the way the season's gone.
Obviously happen.
He'll score twice. I don't know if he'll stick his fingers in his ears. I'm sure he'll get beer thrown at him by some clown in the stands. And it will be awful, because everything else has been awful this season.
Hashtag don't throw beer at Justin Merrim.
Or anyone. All right. That'll do it, Dave. I think we're done here.
Thank goodness.
Yes, that'll do it for episode 146 of the Mainland Podcast. We'll come back next week. We'll have two games to recap, and we'll look ahead to the season finale against the Red Bulls on the road. And, trip to New Jersey to end the season. That's, it's just right there, a microcosm of how awful the season has been. They don't even get to end it at home. They have to go to New Jersey and take their beating for the final time.
And nobody wants to go to Jersey and take a beating.
I'm from New Jersey, and I don't want to go back to New Jersey and take a beating.
Nobody does. But here's the good thing. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, and that's the last loss of the season.
Yes, and then they can't hurt us anymore. But,
for a while.
As somebody on Facebook said, the pain that Orlando City inflicts on us lets us know we're alive.
Soccer and being a supporter of a team is mostly, or at least in my experience over however many years, is mostly dread, disappointment, with small little hill climbs up to the sunlight and then plunging back down into the muck.
Yeah, it's I guess it's kind of like you are Theon Greyjoy and you're being tortured by Ramsay Snow, and when he stops torturing you, it feels really good by comparison. So when he's not flaying your skin from your bones, it feels all right by comparison to the actual flaying of the skin off your bones. Anyway, that's for you Game of Thrones watchers out there. I don't think Dave does that, because he seems like he's like lost right now. Dave, are you lost right now?
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm completely caught up on Game of Thrones.
Okay, you disappeared on me there for a minute.
I was speechless. Bringing in Greyjoy for any, and those who watch know how that turned out for him. And I love Orlando City, but I don't want to go there.
We are Reek. That is our new name. The Orlando City Reek. It just Reek. Fits. It just fits.
Right now, it does. And even Greyjoy, just the Greyjoy. There's no joy in.
No, you got to cut the joy completely out. The joy has no place here.
It's just gray.
All right, we're getting silly now, so let's sign off episode 1. What did we say it was? 146?
146.
All right, we're getting close to the 150 mark. That's a kind of a big milestone.
Yeah, but we won't hit it until the off season.
That's fine. I'm so ready for the off season. Anyway, that'll do it. We'll be back next week, and we'll take your questions and ask us anything. And one thing I didn't do is look to see if we had any 5-star reviews, but I don't think anybody's listening to us anymore anyway. So if we have any 5-star reviews, maybe I'll just come back and read those next week as part of what we do here. But please, by all means, go to themainland.com where you can read our stuff. We're almost through with our Orlando City, or I'm sorry, our Orlando Pride season in review pieces on every player. So those are in a nice collection for you. You can read those. We only got a few players left. Of course, you can like us on Facebook. That's something you can do.
Ooh.
You can also follow us on Twitter. These are all ways that you can support us. Please go to iTunes, leave us a nice review, and we will read it on the air. We haven't. I'm just had all that time. I was able to stall and look it up, and we haven't had anything since September 22nd. So you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We'll read it on the air. Please subscribe. Tell your friends about us, and we'll be back to do it all again next week. So, Dave, you got any final thoughts here?
I am Reek.
You are. All right, and I am Groot.
Nice. I am Steve Rogers.
I'm probably not Groot.
And I'm certainly not Steve
All
Rogers.
right. There's going to be a new Steve Rogers, or at least there's not going to be a Steve Rogers here pretty soon, according to the actor that
Okay,
is playing him.
that's a whole nother podcast we'll have to start.
I know. All right, that's it. We're out of here. We will see you next week. Follow Dave on Twitter @MainlandDave. Follow me on Twitter @MainlandMichael, and of course follow the site @TheMainland. And that's it for this week. On behalf of David Rowe, I'm Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do by saying, Go City and Go Pride.